You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference, podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
What's up, K-State Nation? This is the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, your host. Episode number 10 of Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. We're talking all about Kansas State athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas, and a little bit of what's going on in the community. Appreciate you guys tuning in once again to another episode of this new K-State Podcast, the Purple Project Podcast, here on this Monday night, a different night that we're recording. It is July 13th, 2020, and this will go out first thing in the morning. So usually we record on Saturdays, right? But due to me being out of town, emergency out of town for the weekend, decided to hold off until tonight and I'm trying to make it. If my voice sounds any different, you guys have to let me know throughout the week. But for right now, let's get our co-host online from San Diego, Alex Aiden, double A. What's up, man?
How are things going with you, Eddie?
Just got back late in town. Last night from emergency, out of town, unexpected trip to KC. So that was interesting in itself, but back here now and trying to get through this Monday night and get ready for tomorrow. We got a packed hour once again, my man.
Hey, well, I got to tell you, while you were in Kansas City on your emergency trip, I was here enjoying a nice, just calm, lazy Saturday, nice Saturday night, you know, had the door open to the patio at my apartment, and it was great. Everything was going well, and the next thing I knew, a bird swooped right into my apartment, and I didn't know what to do, Eddie. I didn't know what to do. It's not a fly. You know, when a fly comes in, you're like, ah, darn, that's a pain, you know, but whatever, you know, it's flying all around, you want to kill it, sometimes you can't get it, and you're like, oh, that's frustrating. Well, it's a little more difficult with a bird. You know what I mean? It's a freaking bird, Eddie. Like, I can't just, like, kill it with a fly swatter. So, I didn't know what to do. So,
Wait a minute. So, how big was this bird?
This bird was probably about the size of a pigeon or a dove, I would say. So, it was average size. So, it wasn't like a big crow, fortunately. But it was big enough to where, there was the thought that, okay, it's big enough where it could possibly attack me if I ticked it off enough, so that might not be the best move. So, let's just, because it never landed, Eddie. It was frantically flying in a big circle over my living room and my kitchen. And I was like, how the heck am I going to get this out? So instead of trying to get it out, I proceeded to the patio, and I stood out there, and I was like, okay, let's see if it can figure out that it came in this door, and it can go back out the door. Then I was like, oh, no, I left the doors open to other rooms in my apartment, and if it gets in there, we'll forget it. I mean, there's no getting it out. But fortunately, the bird figured it out. It got out the door. I can't stop replaying it in my mind, though, Eddie. I can't stop replaying the bird swooping like 100 miles an hour into my apartment, and I couldn't even fathom what it was. I was like, oh my gosh, that's a bird.
Oh,
that is,
man,
a bird. So yeah, that there's my fun story from the weekend.
Wow, that kind of had to be some kind of emergency there too, which you were dealing with there. with the burn and everything else.
It turned into a very emergency very quickly. Fortunately, the bird. Yeah, I don't understand, Eddie, why birds are so dumb. Like, when it's Saturday night, first off, what bird is out at night? I don't understand what bird's out at night. Second off, you know, birds flying around, you know, it's probably chasing a bug. You know, that's what birds do, you know, chasing bugs and eating. It's not paying attention where it's going. Like, come on. Come on, that's a door. Like, you're not flying out in the middle of nowhere. How do you not see the door? Whatever.
Oh, man. Before we dive on into this episode, of course, you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you download your podcast, whether it's from Apple Podcasts. If you're listening from there, please leave us a 5-star rating. That will help the podcast out. Spread the word. Spotify, Audioboom, Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and SoundCloud. So, here we go, folks. So, we're going to start on the football side, folks, and then we'll end on the basketball side here tonight, folks. So, of course, Wyatt Hubert, who we talked about on this podcast for quite some time now, obviously, he landed on the official Bednarik. I can't talk this evening, but the Chuck Bednarik Award, Andy Maxwell Football, well, actually, the Maxwell Football Club announced earlier today, that Wyatt Hubert was named for the watch list for the 26th annual Chuck Bednarik Award. There we go. So, Wyatt Hubert, once again, in the news for good reasons. Again, Hubert, for those of you who do not know, a Topeka native right here in Kansas. I live 45 minutes away from the state capital. He started all 12 games last year. 33 tackles with 12.5 tackles for loss and had 7 sacks. He was tied 2nd in the conference with sacks and was 10th in tackles for loss. He is tied his career high with, well, he tied his career high, excuse me, with 2 sacks, backing up to last year against the Cowboys of Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, while he had a season high 4 tackles and 1.5 tackles for loss against the upset win last year over number 5 Oklahoma once again. So Wyatt Hubert, Alex, once again in the news for positive reasons. You know, he's going to be that impact player, especially on a defensive line, Alex, that lost some critical players this offseason. And we talked about COVID-19, and we'll touch on that here momentarily. But Wyatt Hubert, once again, he's going to be the impact player on the defensive line, and he's going to create a lot of attention. We've already talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah, you know, well-deserved, first and foremost, for Wyatt. Anybody who watched K-State football last year for an extended period of time understands just how valuable he is to that defense. He really came, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, but I'm not sure how many people expected Wyatt Hubert to have the type of season that he had last year. And it was really showed the potential that he has. You know, it's not, it was a flash in the pan season or a one-hit wonder or anything like that. He is a really talented football player that that I believe is going to continue to grow and evolve in his time at K-State, and he's going to get better this year and then even better the year after that. So well-deserved to be on the watch list going into his, I believe it's his junior campaign.
Yeah.
He's a disruptor. You're right, Eddie. And you know, as you know, people a lot of times they look at the statistics and they think, oh, you know, let's look at the numbers. You know, the numbers tell it all. And, you know, me personally, I've always kind of been of the mentality, you know, I'd rather have someone who, you know, maybe they don't put up 15 sacks, you know, or 20 sacks in a single season, but somebody who's going to be consistently disruptive on the defensive line, because it's bigger than just rushing the passer. There's a lot of different elements to the game, and I feel like Wyatt Hubert, you know, they would contribute in all those different areas. He is disruptive. He may not get a sack, but he may force the quarterback off of his spot and force him to make an inaccurate throw. He may blow a play up in the backfield in a run play, and he may do, you know, by setting the edge. He may do a good job batting a ball down on a crossing route. These are all things I've seen him do. And, oh, he also is good at rushing the passer as well.
Yep.
So, Wyatt, Hubert, he's got so – he's just a disruptor. He's just a disruptor. And for me, it's kind of a weird comparison because they don't play the same position. But I kind of think of Chris Jones in Kansas City for the Chiefs or whoever's Chiefs fans. You know, he puts up good stats. But when I view him on the Chiefs defensive line, I view someone who's constantly just – disrupting plays, you know, constantly batting balls down, constantly plugging up a hole, constantly setting the edge, doing all these different things that just make it hard for the quarterback to get going, hard for the running back to get going, and that's kind of, I kind of view Wyatt Hubert in that role, even though he's a defensive end and Chris Jones is a tackle.
Yeah.
but you know, they do similar things, and so, you know, Wyatt's he does a great job at that. I mean, you mentioned it. You know, you listen to how many tackles for loss he had on top of just sacks. You know, that's a sign of him getting in the backfield prior to the play developing. And anytime you get in the backfield before the play develops, you're blowing that play up. You know,
uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe they find a way to get the pass off and they do get a big yard. Yeah, maybe you miss the tackle and the running back does break free and get positive yardage. But the first key to blowing up a play is to get into that backfield before that play can develop, and Wyatt Hubert is great at doing that.
Yes, he is. Wyatt Hubert, once again, on the Chuck Menard list for this upcoming football season. And so you texted me, you Facebook messaged me prior to the show. Yeah, I just got done listening. Well, I was halfway through Gene Taylor's talk with John Kurtz. John Kurtz, who hosts the game here in Manhattan, Kansas.
Very interesting. That was a very interesting interview.
On K-Man. And we talked about some of those things already here on the Pro Project Podcast, Alex. And over the weekend, I want to say it was before the weekend, but the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are just going to go with the conference play. And the Big 12, according to Gene Taylor, what he's talked to John Kurtz, said, what he said, they're not going to it just yet. So, and then you brought up, I can't pull up right now. I'm going to try to pull it up here real fast on my cell phone here. Okay, so, and of course, you know, if the Big 12 does decide not to go with these conference games, you're going to lose a little bit of money there. But also, you said that Iowa State's athletic director said if they don't go through a fall season or a college football season in general, they lose. this was astounding. $40 million.
$40. That would be a four with seven zeros after it, to be exact. So John Kurtz asked Gene Taylor. He said, you know, that this is what was said by the athletic director at Iowa State. I'm blanking on his name. His first name's Jamie. I don't know. I'm blanking on his last name. But he said that Iowa State athletic director came out and, you know, discussed, you know, the revenues and you know how it's a balancing act on money and the health and safety, and how a lot of people are just thinking about the health and safety aspects. They're not thinking about the money aspects, which I've been telling you all summer long. And he displayed it by saying, look, if we didn't have a football season, we would lose $40 million. And so John Kurtz said, well, what would K-State lose to Gene? And Gene said, well, you know, that's, you know, we haven't crushed the numbers yet. We haven't done the math yet on exactly what we would lose. So he said, I can't give you an exact number, but it would be substantial. And, you know, he talked about the Ahern Fund having about $15 million in it. He talked about the Big 12 TV deal being about $36 million. Both of those were for football and basketball. And then he talked about season ticket holders, or I think they have, it was anywhere from 8 to, no, it was $12 million. It was $12 million, I believe, in tickets, season ticket holders revenues. So he said, you know, if you kind of slice and dice, he said, you can figure out that'd be a pretty substantial number. It wouldn't be adding all those numbers up, because, like I said, basketball is tied into some of those other funds, but he said it would clearly be substantial, and that's not even getting into the impact that you would have on the community itself, which would also be dramatic, because that's a whole different ballgame. That's a whole different ballgame on what the restaurants and the stores and the places in Manhattan, all the business that they're losing from not having football, and all the people that are flocking to Manhattan on Saturday for the game. So, you know, we've talked all summer about, hey, you know, football, that's the biggest money. You know, that's
it's a money maker, baby. It's a money maker.
Yeah, it's a money maker. And, you know, if there's not a football season, that there are going to be a lot of cuts, and that's just inevitable. And, you know, for some people, and I don't know if this applies to any of our listeners, but some people, it just doesn't, it's not quite registering in their brain. So I was glad that the Iowa State AD came out and said, like, look, we $40 million. Let me give you a number to see. $40 million we would lose for this. And while we don't know what K-State's number is, I thought it was interesting to hear Gene say, you know, look, we do have $36 million in the TV deal. That's what we got last year. So we don't know what we get this year, but that puts in perspective what we got last year. You know, he said, look at the season tickets. That's $12 million. And then you look over at the Ahrens Fund, you're looking at $15 million. And so all of a sudden you're just like, wow, those are some pretty big numbers that Gene's talking about. So I would guess, and this is just a guess for me, so there's no statistical proof in it, but my guess would be K-State would probably be pretty comparable with Iowa State. They're pretty similar. The programs and the universities are pretty comparable when you look at the region, the size, the revenue, all those types of things. So if I had to guess, my guess would be K-State would be around the $40 million number, just because, like I said, K-State and Iowa State, they're pretty comparable. They're pretty comparable programs. It's not like comparing K-State to Texas. You know, obviously Texas would lose more.
Yeah, oh yeah.
K-State, you know, and on the flip side, if you look at KU, I'm sure KU probably wouldn't lose as much as K-State or Iowa State would lose. So, you know, it's, you got to kind of, you know, compare the right schools, and I think Iowa State's probably the closest, actually, to K-State. Or the most comparable, I would say, of any of the schools in the Big 12 for football for K-State. So it was really interesting to hear that little nugget from that interview.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
EG3, Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. The Purple Project Podcast on this Monday night, July 13th, 2020. K-State grads and /Wildcat 91.9 alums here. Here, I want to go back real quick to... I want to evaluate what you just said, but I want to go back and make a correction on Wyatt Hubert real quick. I forgot he missed the game against Oklahoma State, so he did not play all the games. My bad. So I just remembered that while you were talking, like, uh-oh, better make that correction real quick. So Hubert, he missed the Cowboys game, which they missed him quite endearingly there, as we talked about it earlier on this podcast, that Chuba Hubbard chewed up the K-State defense there, over 200 yards. Rushing the football there, and bad news for K-State, Chuba Hubbard is back. That's a whole other podcast coming up if we have football season on the horizon. But G. Taylor did say, still said on that same interview, Alex, that, you know, that just got listening to on YouTube channel, John Kurt's YouTube channel, that they're still optimistic about a fall football season, and they weren't thinking about a spring season just yet. So I thought that their Gene Taylor, you know, laid-back type of personality, sticking to their guns here, Big 12 Commissioner Bowlesby, they're sticking to their guns right now here. And all this talk, I mean, we talked about Alex, all this talk about another possible second wave of this COVID thing. We'll have to see what happens there. But yeah, Iowa State, K-State, you know, they're obviously their rivals, Farmageddon. They're, and I have to agree with you, they're about the same thing. So that's going to be a huge loss there if there would be no football season. And yes, obviously, we harp on this over and over and over again on this podcast. The consequences would be quite severe in 1 year, and you might not recover from that. So the Big 12 right now, sticking to the guns right now. And that's the positive part. Now, the negative part that we discussed before this podcast was a player that you now, well, I haven't had a chance, well, prior to an hour before recording, there was no announcement of names about who got hit with COVID-19. And you stumbled on the fact that one of those names, now, I don't know how long that this is a critical guy in the defense. You're talking about Jonathan Alexander getting tested, was one of the names tested positive with COVID-19. This guy was a transfer last year, and he made an immediate impact right off the jump early on in the season. We saw him sparingly throughout the year, in my opinion, until late against Iowa State. And then he played a lot more in a bowl game against Navy. But this guy can hit you with a thunder, and that right there is a key clog in your secondary. You already have Parker trying to come back from his injury. You got most of your secondary actually coming back besides Denzel Goolsby. But this is, I mean, I don't want to sound a concern alarm just yet, but to have one of your main guys to get it, that's gotta be. I mean, I'm trying to find the right words, but that's a shame that he was one of the guys that got it. Now I don't know how far along this process is for Alexander right now, but that's a key player for K-State's defense right there.
It absolutely is. And you know, when we were on the show last week, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to know who, you know, again, you know, the universities can't release who had it, but wouldn't it be interesting to know, like, who had it, you know, who had this? Because you see it in the pros kind of, you know, get leaked out and them come out and say, you know, hey, I got COVID, this and that. And then, lo and behold, Jonathan Alexander comes out and says, I tested positive for it. You know, I actually initially saw it on Go PowerCat, where they shared his tweet. I saw it today where he shared it and said that he was one of them. Now, the good news on the Gene Taylor interview, he mentioned that there are currently only two K-State athletes now that are testing positive. So that number is down from 14-2. So that's a good sign. So there are positive signs on the COVID-19 testing front for K-State sports. Jonathan Taylor, he was one of the guys who tested positive. I don't know if he's one of the two that's still testing positive now or not, but he was one of them. And you know, Eddie, I had a feeling with 14 positive tests when they shut down the practices, I had a feeling there were some big names in there. And
that's, yeah.
I didn't know who it was, but I thought that's a lot of players, and I bet you that there's probably going to be, if we knew a couple of names, we'd probably be a little more worried than we are right now. Worried may not be the right word, because I don't know if I'm ultimately worried about a player who's mildly sick or asymptomatic, right, as Jonathan Alexander describes it, but you know, it may put up, you know, raise your eyebrows, kind of like the Jonathan Alexander news did. Jonathan Alexander, we've talked about him a lot because he's been at the front of a lot of these other issues that we've been talking about. You know, we talked about at the beginning of the year when we were talking about beginning of the year, earlier in the summer when we were talking about the K-State defense. And then we talked about him when he was in front of
some of these issues in front of the some of the he was doing some of the protesting, and he was kind of leading the charge in this whole I guess call it a, oh, I don't know, the ban, not a ban, I'm blanking now, Eddie, of course, like you got my thought process. Essentially, the boycott, there we go.
There it is.
But the football boycott, he was kind of out ahead, kind of leading that effort, or one of the leaders in that effort. So, you know, he's been out in front. He's kind of been one of the faces of the football team this offseason because of how much he's been out there, kind of in the community and on the front lines and things like that. So it's a name that a lot of people would recognize. And but, you know, hopefully it gets better. You know, I really like Jonathan Alexander a lot. He seems to have the right mindset. He seems to be doing well. So hopefully he'll bounce back quickly. But it was interesting to see that he was one of those players that tested positive. And then just quickly to loop back, you know, you talked about the Big 12 and Gene Taylor's interview with John Kurtz. When I first began listening to that, the first thought that came to my mind was last week when we were talking about Gene Taylor and the AD rankings. And I told you, I said, look, you know, Eddie, he's just kind of a, you know, get your hard hat, get your lunch pail, and, you know, let's just go to work and let's just do it. Nothing sexy about it. And that's what he does. And today when I listened to him do his interview, you know, I've heard some ADs that are all wound up and they're like, oh my gosh, we got to do this. Oh my gosh, we got to do that. Oh, you know, yeah, you know, they're just like freaking out. And then you listen to Gene Taylor, and he's just like, well, you know, he's just so calm. He's just so relaxed, and, you know, he's just like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, we could do this. Well, you know, we're gonna hold, you know, hold tight here, and, well, yeah, we'll put the deadline on it, but we'll just see. And I'm just like, you know, look, he doesn't seem terribly concerned to me, Eddie. He seems like an athletic director that is staying pretty level-headed through this entire process, and says, let's just kind of see how this plays out, and, you know, if it doesn't work, then we'll go to the next contingency plan. So, you know, that I found that pretty interesting as well.
The number 2 ranked AD in the conference in the top 10, 8th, Gene Taylor right there, bringing things down with John Kurtz on their radio show here in town on Cayman. The game, yeah, so Gene Taylor, yep, bring your lunch pail, go to work and see what happens. Keep your head down and don't cause any trouble and let things play out, and yeah, there you go. So we'll see. We'll monitor what as the summer, rest of the summer goes along. If anything comes out, we're going to talk about it here on True P, the Purple Project Podcast. So Gene Taylor, if you have not listened to it, it's on John Kurtz's YouTube channel. That's what I just listened to prior to the podcast. Go ahead.
I want to give kudos to John Kurtz. He did an outstanding job in his interview with Gene. I thought he asked all the right questions, and I thought that he had the right tone, and like I said, it was I thought he did a really good job asking Gene the pertinent questions I think we all really wanted to hear.
Yep, that's right. And before we transition, there is some news in the basketball world. Before I get into that, I do want to compare, you know, I am comparing. So, all right, so the baseball, right? So, baseball. All right, so obviously the Royals had Salvador Perez. He had to go home for your Royals, Alex, with COVID-19 until he recovers, and then the Braves, my team, all right, so we had 4 guys that would test positive, and of course, one of those players we got in trade, and one of those other players was a big key to our offense, Freddie Freeman. So Freddie's feeling better as I speak right now on this podcast. I don't know if how Salvi's doing. I'm sure he's doing all right. But yeah, so I felt that was very interesting to see, to listen to Brian Snicker, the Atlanta Braves manager, for those of you who don't follow the Braves, that he pretty much set an example for his team that, okay, this thing is real, and we got not just these not big names, but there's other big name
big names that are dealing with this too. And there was a NASCAR driver, sorry to put NASCAR in it, but NASCAR driver Jimmy Johnson, a seven-time champion, dealt with it two weeks ago. And I've been hearing a lot of, listening to a lot of reaction about, how to recover from this pandemic, this COVID thing. And the first player, Alex, and I know I'm going off the rails here a little bit, but Rudy Gobert, right? He was the first player to get this, right? So, and he still, from what I listened to, one of the podcasts I was listening to, he still doesn't have his full sense of smell. And I thought that was interesting. And Von Miller, the great defensive end for Denver Broncos, says he's not fully recovered from this COVID-19 thing. So, that, should I be concerned with it? Not yet, but it seems to me alarming that, to a Freddie Freeman, to a Jonathan Alexander, to a Salvador Perez, that to Rudy Gobert, the other player from the Utah Jazz, Mitchell, can't remember his first name right now. Donovan Mitchell. Thank you, Alex. Yeah, there you go. So, these guys, I thought, listening to different perspectives and listening to experts on this COVID-19 deal, and I found that kind of interesting that you don't fully, of course, other guys fully recovered, but you hear some of these big names, at least to this point anyways, you have guys opting out of Major League Baseball because, you have guys that don't want to deal with it. Nick Markakis opt out. Ian Desmond opt out. Yeah, you have all types of players. And then Russell Westbrook, I came across Twitter timeline earlier today on one of my stops, after one of my stops for work. He said he had to go home because of whole COVID issue. So to me, Alex, that's from getting out of this deal, that's what I'm learning out of this deal so far, is just the big names and just the final impact that it has on your bodily system. It's crazy.
Yeah, Eddie, I think I'm beginning to come to the realization that, I don't want to say it's inevitable. It's not inevitable that everybody's going to get the coronavirus. But I remember back in the spring when there were some health experts saying, before there's a vaccine, 40% of the of the United States could get this before then. I remember thinking, are you kidding? 40% of the, how many people are in the U.S.? No way. I remember thinking that, and now you see the numbers kind of do what they're doing, and then you see the CDC come out and say, 10 times that many people could have it, and they're like, 24 times as many people could have it, and then you're just like, there's already over 3 million cases. And then you start doing the math on how many people there are in the U.S. They're like, maybe that is accurate. There could be that many before this happens. So I don't want to say it's not inevitable, but it's out there. It's not going away, and it's out there. Today in California, the governor rolled back and put more stay-at-home orders in place. Everything that's indoor is back closed. So there's, anything that require you going indoors, whether it's a haircut, which I had a haircut scheduled for Saturday, of course. but don't worry, my hairstylist is making an exception. We're going to find a way to get my haircut because it needs to happen. But for haircuts, for people who are working in offices, for restaurants, for anything indoors, it's all shut down in California now, and everything that you do has to be outdoors now. So, I think that's just a sign of what this is doing. And then you talk about the big name players. You mentioned the four with the Braves. The Royals are up to four players tested positive as well. Sporting Kansas City, for any soccer fans, they got a player who's tested positive. We already talked about the K-State players, and so I don't think that anybody's just immune to this thing. It can hit anyone, and the effects are just so unknown. There's so many people who get it get asymptomatic, don't even know they happened, and then you have others who just get taken down for the count with this thing. And when I say down for the count, I don't mean death. That would be insensitive. I'm talking about, you know, really run down, and they're going through the rigorous process of they're really fighting it for a couple weeks, for a month or months, or even in the case of Rudy Gobert, you know, and Von Miller, they're still fighting the effects of it. What you hear, I've heard from multiple people in multiple different scenarios where, you know, my lungs aren't the same, or I can't smell, or I still can't taste, like you said, and so it's still an unknown. You know, I think people don't know. It's still unknown. You know, just how many people have symptoms from COVID-19? How many people don't? I think it's still unknown how many people, you know, the mortality rate. You know, I've heard people bounce things back and forth on it, but I don't think people really know ultimately. I don't think there's enough data there yet to really do research that would be bigger than just a small sample size. So there's just a lot of unknowns with this thing, and I think that's what makes it as nerve-wracking as it is because you just don't know. You can see a young, healthy 20-year-old die from this thing, and then you can see a 101-year-old beat it and be drinking a Bud Light. I saw that somewhere. So I saw that somewhere on TV.
Sorry.
The range, it's such a crazy range back and forth. And then, well, maybe it could cause this. Well, maybe it could cause that. Well, you know, it could cause, you know, lung issues here and, you know, like cause other issues there. So it's unknown, but I think that unknown is the most nerve-wracking part of it. And I think once, you know, we're able to understand a little bit more what it is and what it does, that probably will ease the nerve, ease people's nerves a little bit, because it'll be easier for us to combat it, be able to come up with a game plan on, you know, how to handle these situations. Because right now, you don't know.
Right.
So yeah. you just have to do everything to protect everyone at all costs. So it's going to be interesting. But you're right, Eddie. I mean, when these sports start up, people are going to get it. Athletes are going to get it. I've heard K-State athletes say they understand the risks. I know the risks. I want to go play. Gene mentioned that. He mentioned today in his interview, nearly all these players want to play. They understand the risks, but they want to play. They don't want to lose their season.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you hear it across multiple sports. There are the Nick Markakis's that don't want to take the risk. The Ian Desmonds totally understand. Totally get it. Absolutely. Why you don't want to put yourself in that position. Buster Posey of the Giants as well. So... totally get it, and I don't hold any ill will against them for that. But the majority of people seem to be willing to take that type of risk, and it's just going to be interesting to see how it continues to play out.
That is for sure. Had to get some community talk in here before we transition to the bigger K-State basketball news that we discovered on last Friday, folks. So yeah, just want to throw that in there. Yeah, Governor Kelly decided to roll it back a little bit, so we'll keep an eye on this thing and see where it goes. So here, we're going to step aside real quick, and we'll be back on the other side.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer, a.k.a. EG3AA, Alex Aiden, Purple Project Podcast, rolling on this Monday night in July 13th, 2020. All right, Alex, transitioning to basketball now. And it seems like prior to this announcement that we've been, or a lot of us, have been discussing the fact that, okay, Wichita State, K-State, you know, all this trash talking, KU, the Big Three here in the state of Kansas. Well, K-State and Wichita State will finally... Well, after playing a quote-unquote charity exhibition game, will play a four-game series beginning not this year, but next season, 2021-22. Of course, with COVID pending, quote-unquote, how to put that in there, the schools announced last Friday and had a chance again. We put in John Kurtz on his podcast again. listened to John Kurtz for a little bit there before going out of town there about their thoughts on the whole K-State, Wichita State thing. And look, I feel like we've been talking about this since I've been up here in Manhattan, Kansas, you know. We're going to play Wichita State. We're going to play the Shockers, you know. Those Shockers, you know, we'll see who's the better team in the state of Kansas. KU, us, or the Shockers? Well, we're going to find out next season. It's our next season. I think this is very interesting. All right, so four-game series beginning next year, right? Okay, so the agreement calls. All right, so both games, this is going to be home and home, one at Wichita State and one at Bramlage. And then you have one game going to be at Intrust Arena in Wichita. Well, actually, I'll correct on that. But to summarize it, one game at Intrust Bank Arena, and then the other is going to be, now, I did not know this until John was talking about it, but apparently the Sprint Center is no more. It's the T-Mobile Center.
Really?
Yes. I found that out on Friday when I listened to the game. It's the T-Mobile Center now, not Sprint Center.
Interesting. I did not know that. That does make sense because Sprint and T-Mobile, I believe, merged. But the, I'm sorry, I gotta call it the Sprint Center. I can't not. It's the Sprint Center. It just is. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's always been a Sprint Center since I've landed here at K-State. But yes, they're gonna play home and home, and then one at Intrust in Wichita, and one in Kansas City. And we're just gonna call it Sprint Center because that's kind of what it is.
But they called it the Sprint Center in the press conference.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's a Sprint Center. Maybe it's called the T-Mobile Center, but nah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, the exact dates on this deal. So, okay. So, the Intrust Bank game in Wichita will be next year, December 5th, where, obviously, Wichita State will be the home team. And got it right here. I wrote it down. Yes. So, it is a T-Mobile Center. I did write it down. So, T-Mobile crazy. Center. Sorry, Alex.
Kansas City. That's crazy. What the heck?
Yeah. And then the 2 years, this is in the future, December 22nd, 2023, the two teams will reunite in a T-Mobile Center with K-State as the home team because we know that K-State, every time they play in the so-called what's called the Sprint Center, now T-Mobile, unfortunately, was the home team every time they play in there. So, and then, obviously, the Wildcats will host the Wichita December 3rd, the year before, at Bramlage. And, of course, the final game of this series will be in Charles Cook Arena, December 7th, 2024. Woo! That's a mouthful right there for y'all. So, all right. So, Bruce Weber, Greg Marshall, Wichita State, what are your thoughts on this finally going to go down?
I got a lot. A lot of thoughts. After first thought was, well, never thought this would happen. I had the same as you. It was ever since I got to K-State as a freshman in 2011. This was a talking point. You know, K-State, Wichita State. It really gained steam. Was it my sophomore year? It might have been my junior year. It was the year that Wichita State was really good. They were the one seed. I can't remember if that was 2012, 2013. I don't know.
So you're talking about K-State?
I'm talking about Wichita State. The year that Wichita State was really good, and they had Van Vliet, they had Ron Baker, they had that whole crew, and they were the one seed. They lost to Kentucky.
I thought they were the third seed.
They were the one seed because here's how I remember they were the one seed, Eddie. K-State. Okay, well, this answers my question, actually. It was the 2013 season because K-State was the 9 seed, Kentucky was the 8 seed.
Oh, that's my senior year, I remember now. Yeah, that's my senior year, yeah.
We thought, if K-State beats Kentucky, we'll finally get the K-State Wichita State matchup, and then K-State couldn't beat Kentucky, and then Kentucky went on to beat Wichita State.
That's right. Yeah.
I shouldn't say upset them. That Kentucky team was better than Wichita State, but they pulled a quote unquote upset there and moved on. So. So that was the year that there was really a lot of talk about it because, well, Wichita State, you know, they had a really good team. And they went to the Final Four the year before that. That's right.
Yeah.
So I knew that there was a reason I was thinking both seasons. So, yeah, K-State won the Big 12, and then Wichita State went to the Final Four. And then everybody's like, oh, we got to have a season. And the next year, K-State had the promising season with Marcus Foster as a freshman, and then Wessa Wandu and that crew. And then Wichita State was the one seed, and everybody was like, you know, oh, we have to see this happen. And for Wichita State fans, Wichita State was a school that had everything to gain, and K-State really didn't have much to gain because. We talk about this a lot, and you can say whether this is fair or not, but when you get a Power 5 school like K-State who goes up against a program like Wichita State, yeah, they may be dominant, but it's not a Power 5 school. So if you lose, it's going to hurt you on your resume. If you win, it may help, but it wouldn't benefit you as much as necessarily beating a Power 5 school that's not as good. So that was always the issue with K-State was that, man, there's just not a ton of benefit for us in a game against Wichita State, as fun as it would be. And then obviously that gave Wichita State the ammo to, you know, oh, you're just scared to play us. Oh, you don't want to. You're just scared of us, this and that. Well, I don't hear you saying the same thing, KU. I mean, KU was doing the exact thing. KU said, look, hell no. We're not touching Wichita State with a 10-foot pole. We got absolutely nothing to gain from that. Which they're correct. They don't have anything to gain from that. K-State doesn't have as much to lose because we're not a blue blood who, may have, that type of seating on the line. But all of that said, that was one of the big bugaboos is this really worth K-State's time, especially if K-State's got a good basketball team that's going to be competing for where this could legitimately hurt their resume. And, K-State ultimately decided, we do want to do this. We think it would be good for the state, which is what I believe. I think that it would be fantastic. I always thought it would be fantastic if they could find a way to play. I was like, you know what, the resume thing, I get it, but you know what, it's one game. If you lose, make it up somewhere else. That was always kind of my mentality to the whole resume thing. And so K-State was willing, and then Wichita State didn't have a very good team coming in. K-State had Perry Brown and Cam Stokes and Dean Wade coming in as seniors, and Wichita State was like, nah, we don't want to touch that team. So we're gonna say no to you. So then they said no, and then they were like, well, K-State, of course they just offered us, you know, to play us the year that they knew they'd be good. And it just became this whole back and forth, and I just thought, it's never going to happen. It's just never going to happen. This is the pipe dream that we all wish would happen. But finally, it all prevailed. As Bruce explained at his press conference, he called Greg Marshall and said, I got an idea. You know, this COVID-19 pandemic's going on, and what if people have wanted to see us play for a while. So what if we get together, we do this charity game, kind of like what KU and Mizzou did a couple years ago at the formerly called Sprint Center, where, you know, because KU and Mizzou, they weren't playing yet, but they had the charity game to, kind of make up for it. So Bruce called and he said, hey, let's do this. You know, we could raise money for COVID. And some charities that can help around COVID-19, and that way we can play you guys. We can raise some money. He said, I felt like our team needed to get a legit scrimmage in because we're so young. We've talked about how young this team is. And he says, so I felt like we needed an actual scrimmage. He said, so why not go play them in a scrimmage, make some money, play a team that people want to see, that the K-State and Wichita State fans want to see play each other, and it's a win-win-win. And Greg Marshall said, I'll do you one up. Why don't we get the series done now? And then Bruce said, I love it. Let me go to Gene. And Greg Marshall said, let me go to RAD. And they finally hammered out a deal. So I was so pumped to see that. And then Bruce also touched on, you know, the fact that K-State is going to be able to play in Wichita and be able to continue to grow their brand down there, which we already know is really big.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be able to go to Kansas City. And they'll be able to continue to have their game, their annual games over there. And then it gives you the opportunity for the home and home. And that's a win there as well. And Bruce referenced back to when he was at Illinois, the Mizzou and Illinois games, the other border war, you could say, on the other side of Missouri. He said those games were some of the best games he ever coached. He said there's just never a lack of energy in that building. He said there's nothing like having a crowd that was 50% orange and 50% golden black, and he said there was always someone cheering and the energy was just electric, and it was an amazing atmosphere. He said it's atmospheres that you want to coach in, and it's atmospheres that players want to play in. Mm-hmm. And he said it's just a great non-conference rivalry, and he said I really see the opportunity for something like that with K-State and Wichita State, where you go down to Wichita, you got a lot of K-State fans there. You got a lot of Wichita State fans there. You go up to Kansas City, and you have a lot of K-State fans there. You have a lot of Wichita State fans there, although I do think the K-State fans would probably trump the Wichita State fans pretty strong in the T-Mobile Center. I think it would be closer to the 50-50 split in Wichita, personally. But Bruce, he was correct. I think that you have something there that's much bigger than anything about, my resume. No, I think you've got a chance to have a really cool non-con rivalry that could become a staple game every year, where it's like, who gives a crap? Who's the better team this year? What it might mean for the resume? Every year you can look forward to that K-State-Wichita State game in that arena where it's going to be split 50-50, and it's going to be one of those games that you look forward to every year. K-State doesn't have an opponent like that on their non-con schedule, and some teams do, and, you know, quite frankly, I'm kind of envious of some of those teams that have those non-conference rivalries. So, it looks like KU may be getting that with Mizzou because it seems like they've kind of severed some of their issues initially with their scheduling there. So why not K-State go out and get it with Wichita State and do it? So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be an absolute blast. And Wichita State's they've got a great basketball program. So it's going to be a tremendous challenge for K-State. And that's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to make K-State better if they're playing Wichita State every year. And it's going to be a game that they're going to know they have to get up for. It's going to be a game that's going to prepare them for Big 12 play. K-State is always talking about how they're trying to strengthen that non-con schedule because sometimes they have some issues playing some bigger marquee teams. So if you have issues with that, what's the point of the whole resume discussion anyway? You may as well bring a Wichita State in who's going to at least beef the resume up some and be able to alleviate that problem a little bit. So I think it's a great deal. And ultimately, it's just great for the state. The state of Kansas, I just think that, have another Sunflower Showdown. It is a big deal, and it's not the ultimate Sunflower Showdown. Never will be. That'll always be K-State, KU. That won't be taken away by Wichita State. But what a great second option, for the state of Kansas, and to show off the state, show off the universities, and quite frankly, I think it's a game that could gain a decent amount of national media attraction. I could see that as a game that was played on ESPN. ESPN2 on a yearly basis, and that's good exposure. That's good exposure for everybody. So, I know K-State plays a lot of games on ESPN, but still, it's great to be able when you can get national non-con games on national networks. And so it just seems like a win for everybody. It's crazy it took this long for it to happen. But I'm so excited for the series to kick off, beginning with that charity game this year.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 10 here, about to start to wrap up here. Purple Project Podcast, episode 10. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. And yeah, the kind of my final thoughts before get our final. I have to ask you a question here, Alex, here to wrap up the podcast. But yeah, Wichita State here, real quick, finished top half of our league, the American Athletic Conference. 23-8 with a conference record of 11-7. That's behind Tulsa, and actually it was a three-way tie in that conference: Houston, Cincinnati, and Tulsa. Which Tulsa has given K-State a bunch of problems the last several years. That's a whole other discussion for this podcast.
And quickly, I just want to jump in and I'll say K-State's willing to play Tulsa 3 years in a row. Why are you like that? I don't know if I'll play Wichita State, but we'll play Tulsa. See, that's what doesn't make any sense to me. That just doesn't make sense. Like, you know, because they've lost two of their three games against Tulsa, and it's killed them on their resume. You may as well play Wichita State and have the cool in state rivalry, then rather than play Tulsa, which K-State fans aren't going to care about. And it's the equivalent of playing Wichita State. Sorry, I had to get that in. I had to get that in when you mentioned Tulsa. I just did.
Tulsa. We could have lost Tulsa last year, but like I said, that's a whole other discussion. I'm sure we'll get to here later on this year on the Pro Project Podcast. But yeah, Wichita State, yeah. And K-State, they're going to need all the practice they can get right now. And they can use that type of scrimmage, especially when one of your rivals is about 2 hours down south away from you. And get together, see what you can work on, see how you can find positives, and how to work on the negatives. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it as well, finally. So you can't chicken out if you have a good team or not, like Wichita State did when we had the big three. So you can't chicken out now. So you're going to have to man up and get after on the court. So it's all about, right?
Yeah, I'm sick of, you know, teams saying, well, I got a good team this year, so no, let's push it up here. Well, no, you have a good team this year, so I don't put it in. It's like, stop with the, oh, I have a good team this. Make an extended series and then just play it out. And so that's what they're going to do. I have no idea who's going to be the best team. Who's going to be the better team the year after this upcoming year? Who the heck knows? I mean, I would guess K-State maybe because they got a lot of good young talent, but I don't know. If it doesn't pan out, it absolutely could be Wichita State. I don't know much about their recruiting class, but you're right. No excuses. Man up, put the big boy pants on, and go play some basketball.
Yeah, that's right. Go hoop it up. Have fun out there. Go play some basketball. All right. So, to cap off this podcast here, having only a few more minutes here on the Pro Project Podcast, appreciate y'all for downloading the podcast. Remember, I'm going to get this in real quick, the Pro Project Podcast. Find it wherever you download your podcast, whether it's from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, iHeartRadio, Radio.com, and SoundCloud. The Pro Project Podcast is starting to get up there a little bit more, so we're on the move. All right, so Alex, this is for you. You're a Chiefs fan, obviously. So, obviously, Pat Mahomes signed that big-time contract. Now, this reminded me of at the Atlanta Braves when they signed their top two prospects, Ronald Acuña Jr., and Ozzie Albies to a 10-year lifetime contract with a whole bunch of money. So this, Patrick Mahomes, this just reminded me of that. And obviously, the Chiefs, obviously, there are a lot of Chiefs fans who obviously will listen to this podcast. But the Chiefs, obviously, they won a Super Bowl last year. Finally, after 50 years of trying to get to the Super Bowl, they finally got it. Well, they've been in the Super Bowl, but they had their, well, you know what I'm saying, but
I do, yeah.
Patrick Mahomes. Tis just got signed for 10 more years, And Tom Brady, obviously, we have to deal with Tom Brady now at Tampa Bay. That's a whole other schedule. I'm not afraid of Tom Brady now than I was used to. But anyway, so here's what I'm going to get to. So Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady. Tom Brady won all those Super Bowls while he was in New England. That's going to be a whole other storyline now that he's down there with Tampa Bay. Him and Gronk. Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City, they wanted to have him long term. Well, yep. They're going to have him 10 more years, and they wanted to chase, apparently, from what I'm hearing and from what people are telling me, and I've been paying attention. Oh, yeah, don't. I've been paying attention. They want to chase that dynasty of the New England Patriots with this signing right here. So, and I read your status, I believe last night somewhere, that you were, you were a little worried about this deal. But, so, what are your overall thoughts of signing your guy, your QB1, Patrick Mahomes, long term, and now you have one Super Bowl? Can you, I mean, this is far-fetched right now. We haven't even gotten a training camp yet, which is supposed to be later this month. And so, what are your thoughts about your franchise quarterback, Pat Mahomes, and can you guys, with Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, because Patrick Mahomes said on NFL Network, he was at a golf tournament, the golf tournament this weekend with Travis Kelce. He was with Charles Rock and all of them, but they're chasing something special. And he was wanting some of them same guys around him to make it that special run to get not two champ. I'm gonna steal a phrase from LeBron James: not one championship, not two championships, not three championships, not four championships. You're talking about all them championships. So, Alex, I'm gonna let you have the floor for a few minutes before we wrap the show. What are your thoughts on Pat Mahomes, the Super Bowl MVP, staying long term as a franchise of the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, first I gotta say that LeBron quote. I hope I never hear that come out of a Chiefs player. maybe someone will say it at some point, but oh boy, I remember how mad that Adrian LeBron said that. I was just like, "What are you saying that?" Because I was so, I don't know why I felt so betrayed when he left Cleveland, but I just did. I'm not from Cleveland, but I guess I felt for them because that's something that would happen to Kansas City, but it didn't because Mahomes stayed. So Mahomes, he's actually now under contract for the next 12 years. He signed the 10-year deal, and he has two more years left on his current deal.
I didn't think about that one. Okay.
Which is going to make him about $8 million-ish in base salary this year, and then $24-ish million in base salary the year after that. Then the 10-year deal is going to kick in, so he's good through 36 years old. Geez, and he's like 24 right now. You know, it's a deal that when you see it, Eddie, the potential of paying someone on a football team over half a billion dollars, you worry a little bit about your salary cap. Not gonna lie, you kind of think, oh boy, is it gonna be Mahomes and the C string out there? I mean, who's it gonna be? But the more you dove into the contract, or the more you dive into the contract, I should say, it's really actually a pretty team friendly deal. If there's ever been such thing as a 10-year, $503 million team-friendly deal, this is it. This is the version of that. They used $140 million guaranteed for injury, and then there's some majority of his bonuses are signing bonuses. So, you know, that's an interesting wrinkle. It allows for the Chiefs to be able to move some money around, possibly, from year to year. There's some flexibility there for him to restructure the deal, rework the deal to move money around so the Chiefs can kind of make the moves that they need to make to be able to put talent around him. And then also, Mahomes is willing to sign a deal that was really long rather than something shorter because he knew, according to him, that, you know, the quarterback market's going to come up and exceed it, and he'll probably be playing under value on the back half of that contract. And that was a risk that he was willing to take because he said, I want to be in Kansas City my entire career. That'll give the Chiefs the ability to not be hamstrung. That was kind of his equivalent of the discount, quote unquote, for the team by signing the long deal and not the Chiefs not having to possibly pay him even more in 3 or 4 years down the road. So when you take that and then you look at the way it's structured, there's not a percentage of the salary cap that's tied to it, so the Chiefs don't have that. And being able to move that money around and being able to restructure and rework and those types of deals really allows the Chiefs to do the things they need to do to continue to put the talent around him to succeed. And you're right. The dynasty word has been thrown around, Eddie. And Mahomes, the first thing he said when he signed, he said on Twitter, he said, now we can, I'm here to create a dynasty. The slogan that the Chiefs players have been using all offseason is hashtag run it back on Twitter. They're determined to go run it back. And I believe they're the best team in the AFC personally. Right now, especially with the coronavirus, and they have 20 of their 22 starters coming back, so there's really not much of an acclimation that they need to make, because it's really the same group that they had last year, plus some good rookies that they're able to add in there. So, I absolutely think that they got a great shot at it this year, and then it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I do know this. Brett Veach, the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, I have trust in him. That he's really good at working with the salary cap and making decisions that are not made on emotion, but are made more on the brains and the analytics and those types of things. And so I don't feel like he's going to go out and overpay for someone because he feels emotionally invested to him or something like that. And I think that positions the Chiefs well to possibly be able to have a dynasty, because that's what the Patriots did. Let's just call what it is. The Patriots never got emotionally invested into a player. They made the right football decision for their organization year in, year out. And one of their philosophies was, rather get rid of someone a year too early than a year too late. And you know what? That is a true saying in sports. You would much rather get rid of someone a year too early than a year too late, because if you get rid of them a year too late, there's probably going to be a lot of money that you paid him, and there's probably a lot of money that you're going to owe him for some
I was about to say that. Yep.
So I don't think the Chiefs will find themselves in a ton of those situations, but who knows? Because it's over 12 years. Brett Veach may not even be the GM at the end of that. So who the heck knows? But you know what? I love Patrick Mahomes. I'm sitting next to my Patrick Mahomes bobblehead right now on my desk. So I got my poster of him that my brother and his girlfriend made. They actually got him a Mahomes jigsaw puzzle, and they put it together, glued it together, and framed it, Eddie. So I am now looking at it on my wall as well. So Mahomes is well positioned in my room. I absolutely love him. He's a smart kid. He's a competitor. He's really humble. He's insanely talented. I don't have a man crush, Eddie, I promise. But how can you not? Eddie, if you were a Chiefs fan, you would love Mahomes, and you would be so pumped if he was signed to your team for 12 more years.
Oh, I would be. Hell yeah, I would be. Why not? I was excited when Kenyon Albies was signed for full term, so heck yeah, I'll be on board. Absolutely, yeah. You gotta have a guy like that. And of course, Patrick Mahomes wouldn't say what LeBron said when he was down in Miami. I'm gonna say it for him. But yeah, absolutely. When you have a dynamic player who can throw no look passes like that, what Patrick Mahomes did? Hell yeah, I want to keep him. Absolutely. So
Eddie, I've heard people make the joke. When are we going to see Mahomes throw the behind-the-back pass, ha, 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 as a joke? Well, what's funny is he practices the behind-the-back throw a lot, and I am telling you, it's going to come out eventually in a game where he is going to throw a behind-the-back pass, and everyone's going to go, holy bleep. And they're going to be like, I can't believe he just did it, and I'm going to laugh my butt off, because I know it's coming. I know it's coming at some point. I hear the jokes. I hear all the jokes that people say, oh, what's he going to do? Throw the ball on his back next time? He's practicing it. That's all I know, Eddie, is he is practicing the behind-the-back throw. So no looks behind the backs. You name it, apparently he can do it, Eddie.
Yeah, he can do it all. So we'll definitely see what happens on that front. And we'll definitely talk a little bit more as we go along. But, yeah, time has run out on the Purple Project Podcast here tonight. Alex, another great episode. Tell us where you can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. The personal Twitter is at AFACHTEN. The professional Twitter is at Alex_ITRC. Personal Twitter, well, just some of my more personal takes. I think the most recent thing I tweeted was actually something you liked, Eddie. It was Lamar Jackson's reaction to his 94 on Madden. So it was literally live when he figured it out. He was not a fan. He was not a huge fan of that. So those are some of the things you can find on the personal Twitter. The professional Twitter is more of some of the professional work that I'm doing with my company and organization. Just encourage you guys to check it out.
Yes, and I want my 99 rating on Madden also.
Hey, you know what? Mahomes got his 99 rating. He was pumped.
He sure was. You can find me at Eddie_EG3 on Twitter. And if you're wanting to learn more about NASCAR or to listen to what happened in the latest weekend of NASCAR, I have a podcast called the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3. Another episode coming up. I record that here. We have the All-Star Race coming up Wednesday night, so it's a quick turnaround. So I'm going to have a busy week doing that as well. So, yeah, a lot going on with NASCAR, and soon enough we're going to have training camp, and we'll keep the monitoring what's happening here, of course, with K-State football. So see what happens.
Hey, Eddie, it was great to be on, and we will see. We'll see if we can have a quiet week. I keep thinking maybe we'll have a quiet sports week, and it never ends up quiet. For no sports going on, there is sure a lot going on in the background, I got to tell you.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes, and Alex, we'll do it again next week, and we'll see if things stay calm, or we'll see if things get ratcheted up like it has been. But, yep, we'll see on that front.
Regardless, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer, thank you guys for listening to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, episode number 10. Thank you for listening. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, iHeartRadio. You know the deal. Spread the word to your K-State friends to hop on to the K-State Purple Project Podcast. But for right now, we're signing off. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time on the Purple Project Podcast. Here come them cats. We're out.
On the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.